SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Thursday, the 12th of February 2026. It's a day where the Australian share market hit a record high during the day, but the S&P ASX 200 eased from those highs, still managed to finish stronger by 0.3%. We'll have the details with Evan Lucas in a few moments, but first to my interview with AMP CEO Alexis George. The financial services company posted a $133 million full-year profit. That's down 11%, but the headline result includes one-off costs related to historical class actions and business simplification charges. It is, though, posting a dividend of 4 cents per share. That's for the full year and up on the previous year. Its share price, though, was smashed today. Shares in AMP down almost 27%, its biggest intraday drop since 2003, missing some market expectations. So to tell us more about that and how she feels about the result on her last result as CEO, I spoke with its CEO, Alexis George. Alexis, this is your last set of results as CEO of AMP. How different is the business now compared to when you took the role 5 years ago?
Oh, look, I think it's hard to recognise the business from 5 years ago. I look at the portfolio and now we're a wealth and retail bank focused portfolio across Australia and New Zealand. So that's the first thing. We still have some partnerships left, but predominantly that. We've resolved all of the Royal Commission legacy issues. So I think that's something that's really been good from our perspective. And thirdly, I think our reputation has improved enormously. When I walked in the door, the worst it had ever been. I look at the results now, it's the best since 2008. And finally, I think we're a growing business now. We're a business that's agile, we're a business that's innovative, and we're demonstrating that we can grow the businesses we're in. And that certainly wasn't the case 5 years ago when all the businesses were shrinking.
We cannot talk about the share price reaction today, down more than 25% at one stage. To what extent does that disappoint you, and how do you reassure investors as you leave?
Oh, look, I'm human. I'm not immune to feedback, and I think the share market is immediate feedback, so that's disappointing. But I think it's important to come back to the fundamentals of the business and the result we announced today. Look at our profit. It's up 21%. Our earnings per share, which is what shareholders experience, is up nearly 26%. Our platform's business growth was up 85%. Our S&I business is turning around. Our New Zealand business continues to turn around. You know, so I think the fundamentals of the business are really strong. The feedback we've got from the market today is that we've got surplus capital. And yeah, that's true. We do have surplus capital. But I think we've demonstrated we're really good stewards of capital. We've returned $1.1 billion over the last 5 years. And so, you know, we'll continue to manage that capital responsibly. And, you know, the rest of the business is in good shape.
I know it's a smaller part of the business, but AMP Bank, specifically AMP Bank Go, which has been a bit of a drag, what exactly is its role in the increasingly competitive deposit and home loan space?
Yeah, well, clearly banking in Australia is a competitive space. And I think when you're a smaller bank, it's not easy. I think when we launched AMP Bank Go, which is off of the back of the Starling banking system in the UK, it was about developing a different proposition. Yes, we wanted to attract personal customers, but we also wanted to focus on those mini businesses, so the single or double person business. And that's why we launched Bank Go. I mean, to date, we've taken in $310 million worth of deposits. Not so many in businesses yet, but we really only just bought the initial program to play in September of last year. So you'll see a lot more capability come to market in 26. It is something different in focusing in that mini businesses. And I don't know if you've used it, but I personally think it's a great experience. It's flexible and it's something a bit different.
Can we focus on superannuation for a bit? There's been quite a large amount of money flowing out of industry super funds of late. To what extent has AMP been a beneficiary of that?
Like, it's really hard to say what exactly has come from that, because we've been going through such a large transformation in our own right. I think for us it's been about, we are delivering innovation. Look in the retirement space. Everyone's copying what we've put out there now. So I think that's a great accolade to the team. We have focused on making sure that for advisors they can be efficient. For our consumers, we're educating on them, with them. But, you know, we've really been focused on those fundamentals, and that's come into play now. And I think the retail space went through some hard times. They had to focus on service. They had to focus on compliance. They had to focus on governance, and that's come into play now.
I saw an interesting article in the AFR this morning quoting Australian Super Chairman Don Russell, basically saying that fund managers need to do a better job amid the switch from the super accumulation phase to the drawdown phase. What's your takedown on this, and how is AMP helping its members into retirement exactly?
Well, I think we came to that space about 3 years ago, and we launched our innovation in the retirement income space 2 years ago on our platform and last year in our default super environment. So I think we've known that this income phase is critical. There's large amounts of money moving into that post-employment phase, and we've been one of the major innovators in that space. So absolutely agree, but I think we're at the forefront of that.
And yesterday, the government introduced a bill to Parliament proposing to increase the tax rate on super earnings for accounts with more than $3 million. It'll affect around 90,000 people. What are your thoughts?
Look, I don't see that there's a problem with having some kind of cap in the amount that can be in superannuation, right? So I think what number it is, the government decided on 3 million. I think there'll be some complexities in dealing with this tax, but we'll deal with it. So, I mean, I think we just got to move on. Most of the members we have in AMP are middle Australia.
And just finally, you're resigning at the end of March, and I hope you don't mind me asking a question about gender diversity in leadership positions in corporate Australia, especially the ASX 200. Meg O'Neill from Woodside stepped down as CEO last year. ASX CEO Helen Lofthouse announced her resignation earlier this week. What are your thoughts, and what's your message to aspiring leaders?
Yeah, look, this is something I was thinking about this morning, actually, and I think diversity is really important. I'd like to think that in my career as an executive, I've ensured that I mentor women, give gateways to women to succeed, and I'm so proud that of our three businesses here in Australia, two are still women, along with our CTO is a woman as well. So I'm really pleased that we've still got the diversity. But it's disappointing to see some of these numbers. And the only thing I would say is I'm going to continue to make sure I can do everything possible to change that, because I don't like the trajectory we're on at the moment. And these are tough jobs. I accept that. But I don't see that women can't do them.
So when you say help, what exactly do you mean?
Any budding CEOs, feel free to contact me, because I've learnt a lot about what to do and what not to do. And I'm going to have a bit more time on my hands in the coming months.
Alexis George there, the CEO of AMP, and just clarifying that 21% increase in profit number she was referring to there earlier was the underlying profit number.
Starting a new life in Australia isn't easy.
A lot of companies have rejected me.
Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm gonna quit, I give up.
Work in Progress is a podcast to help skilled migrants rebuild their careers in a new country. You'll hear inspiring real-life stories, expert advice, and valuable tips to help you find a job and advance your career. Work in Progress. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, let's take a look at the Australian share market in more detail now. The S&P ASX 200 up 0.3% to 9,043. That was basically because of the financial and utilities sectors, because information technology stocks there were slammed. That index down by 6%, and that's because of a software sell-off again, because of renewed fears of AI disruption in that sector. The likes of WiseTech Global down by 6.6%, Xero slumping 8%. 6.4% today. The bank's doing well across the board. ANZ hitting a record, up 8.5%. It followed its cash profit for the first quarter, up by 6%. And of course, yesterday we heard from the Commonwealth Bank, which posted a $5.4 billion half-year cash profit. Shares up again today, another 5.4%. Westpac, NAB, and ANZ also doing well today. For a closer look at the day's market action, Stephanie Youssef spoke with independent market analyst Evan Lucas.
So, Evan, the ASX hit a record high today. It's since come down from there, but it's still in positive territory. What's driving the market?
So there was obviously a lead into this week around whether or not we were priced to perfection. And clearly what we have seen from particularly a CBA, now also ANZ, Macquarie going back on Monday, is that the financial services, which do make up the majority of our market, let's be honest, it includes the insurers, et cetera, have had a much better half than expected. So it should, considering we had three rate cuts for it to go through. You also had the government's, you know, first home owner grant that came forward in terms of where it sat as well. So all of that culminates in why we had a much better result, particularly from CBA, ANZ as well. Macquarie has driven us to where we are. And then we are still leading into what's going to come from BHP and Rio, which is likely to also be in line or slightly better considering the values that we've seen in the Aussie dollar at the back end of last year. All that put together meant that sort of risk around price to perfection not only dissipated, but actually meant that we could jump on board and actually see the market hit that new record.
With ANZ, as you mentioned, they put out their quarterly results today. What did you make of them?
So clearly Nuno's movements are happening. So Nuno Matos's overall movement around ANZ was the big story. Yes, you can see that revenue was slightly ahead of system. Yes, you can see that they did slightly better on unaudited net profit than what the market was expecting. But the big story is around the cost out. I mean, there's an 8% fall in terms of what you saw in cost out. You can see that the efficiencies that he's brought in are starting to bear fruit. You can see the headcount drop is also starting to bear fruit. So all of his revolution, let's call it what it is, because he has clearly come through with a very strong mandate to change the bank, is starting to come through. Still a long way back, and I do want to point that out. There is still clearly a fairly large two-tiered setup, which is between what CBA and NAB and probably Macquarie are at versus where Westpac and ANZ are at. But it does show that under his leadership, change is happening, rightly or wrongly.
Coupled with CBA's result yesterday, do you think that sentiment has changed against the banks?
Maybe. I think, again, the other sentiment is you've got to look at CBA for what it is, which is I always refer to it as the bellwether of the Australian economy. I mean, CBA openly tell you that, you know, nearly one in two people bank with it. It's about 46% of the entire population have some form of bank account with CBA. So you get that ability to see the insights into the economy, but also the insights of just how big a behemoth it is and the fact that, you know, when it basically does something, it moves everything with it. So it does have pricing power. It does have overall service power. It has its ability to be probably first cab off the rank for loan choice, for loan growth, et cetera. And all of that was there. I mean, again, as we said at the start of this interview, is you can see all of those changes that we saw in 2025, governmental, monetary policy, actually flick up in CBA's numbers. And they were there very front and center and explains that 6% jump in cost, you know, NPAT that was there. It's a very, very strong, very stereotypical CommBank result. Yes, people were probably saying, you know, had it got overly done at the end of the last year when it was pushing up to, you know, 185, 190 a share, it probably has told you that it's justified that. I mean, it's always paid a premium. So I would argue that the results from CBA on Wednesday were absolutely stereotypical them doing what they do well, which is that they are still clearly monstering most other banking services.
Another company that reported today's AMP, their shares have been smashed. At one point they sunk to their lowest since 2003, despite its profit results. Why is that? And what do you make of those results?
Yeah, so, okay, put the net profit to one side. Every other part of their aspect was horrible. I don't mix that word up. I mean, they missed on everything that mattered. If you look at it, and it wasn't just a small miss. You're talking about you know, $10 million misses, you know, in their revenue. So 106 EBIT versus, you know, 120 odd that was supposed to be there. You look at the revenue below expectations. You look at the net interest margins below expectations. You look at the amount of fund under management that was below expectations. Inflows didn't meet anywhere near where it was. Yes, they've done cost cutting and that's where that profit line pops up. But that's the bottom of the funnel, as we call it. The top of the funnel and all the way down it is not making great reading. And the turnaround story under, you know, Alexis George was there. It's clearly hit a wall. And again, AMP is, like all fund managers out there, competing incredibly hard for funds that are finding other options, but also around cost. I mean, they are a more expensive and have been for many, many years. And again, in a cost-sensitive market where there is a plethora of options, you've got to be either incredibly good or ahead of the curve. And AMP, unfortunately, for many, many years now, haven't been either.
Well, reporting season is well and truly underway. What are some of the trends that you're starting to see emerge?
So, look, first and foremost, the first trend is clearly the financials. I mean, you can't get past the fact that they are going and have done better than what was forecasted by the market leading into the end of the 31st of December. So that's the first part. I think the second part, though, is that like we tend to do pretty much every earnings seasons, we're sitting in line. I mean, the majority of firms that have reported so far, and it's not a huge amount, it's enough, have been in line. There's only about 10% that have beaten expectations and about 17% that have missed. So it's a fairly stereotypical number. What is showing, though, is that like we're seeing in the inflation data, it's now actually coming through in the actuals. We're actually seeing that spending driving up inflation is coming through in some of the early discretionary stocks, and we'll watch them at the end of the year. We'll also look at what's going on with regards to the rest of the banks and whether or not the loan drive that's come from the first homeowners grant being brought forward, the fact that we had three rate cuts last year, is all there. The other part that we have yet to really see, guidance has been pretty mild in terms of what 2026 is. And nobody has put their head above the parapet yet and actually said 2026 will be different because we are in a higher rate, a rising environment, and because there will be some other shocks out there. That, I think, will be the next question, is that as we get through it, do some of those firms that shoot the lights out because of how good the end of last year was actually put their hand up and go, we're not expecting to see the same thing in the second half?
And finally, what are you telling your clients at the moment, and where are the opportunities for investors?
So at the moment, I think you need to keep watching what's going on overseas. I mean, the US is the one to watch in terms of where it's fluctuating. The AI revolution is far from over, and there's still different fluctuation points on that as well. I think the other thing to be very mindful of is where the Aussie dollar is going, and just watching that the import markets that have done very, very well may also find a bit of pressure. So there's pros and cons about the markets that we currently find ourselves in.
That is Evan Lucas there speaking with Stephanie Youssef, and he wraps up the podcast for this Thursday. Give it a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify if you enjoy it. Click subscribe and I'll see you tomorrow.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
Secret agent, criminal mastermind, or Australia's answer to Robin Hood.
He was quite brilliant. He was a crook.
Mark Fennell presents a bizarre true crime mystery.
One of the wildest stories in Australian modern history.
It was like a day in James Bond, really.
The man who fooled a nation.
Did he ever tell you he was a spy?
Whoa, that got my attention.
Australia's greatest con man starts 24th of February on SBS and On Demand.